You don't need special gadgets to be a hero. With unlimited 1.5% cash back on every purchase everywhere, the Capital One Quicksilver Card makes you the hero of every purchase. Whether it's headphones, a lounge chair, or even a well-deserved massage, whatever the Quicksilver purchase, you're the hero. No fighting bad guys, getting in epic car chases, or parachuting out of buildings required. Simple, isn't it? The Capital One Quicksilver Card. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Hey, everybody. If you want to tell the world something or sell the world something, head on over to Squarespace, because they're going to help you build the website of your dreams. Say you want to sell some custom merch. Well, you can set up your online store. Whether you sell physical, digital, or service products, Squarespace has the tools you need to start selling online. So go to squarespace.com/stuff right now, and you will face a free trial. And when you get ready to launch, use our offer code STUFF, and then you'll save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. How could you go wrong with Squarespace? Hey, everybody, it's Josh, and Chuck is here in spirit, too. And we just wanted to drop a casual reminder that we are going to have a swinging Pacific Northwest Swing this coming February, and tickets are now on sale. February 1st, we'll be at the Moore Theater in Seattle. February 2nd, we'll be at Revolution Hall in Portland. And on February 3rd, for SF Sketchfest, we'll be at the Sydney Goldstein Theater. Go check out all of our social medias for more information and links to tickets. And we'll see you in February.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh, and there's Chuck, and Jerry's hanging out too. So that makes this a good old-fashioned Stuff You Should Know episode.
Old school top 10 a dish.
Yeah, do you think we'll actually make it through 10 of these?
I might not. Maybe you'll do all 10.
I'll keep going after you log off. How about that?
Yeah, we could probably get through all 10 of these. They're pretty contained.
We'll see. Let's just start at the beginning. I just want to make sure that we hit the last one, number one, for sure, okay?
Let's do it then.
All right.
What are we talking about even?
Well, we're talking today about cases of mistaken identity, as anyone who read the title of this episode or maybe even the synopsis could tell you.
Right.
And we talked a lot, Chuck, in our doppelganger episode, which hopefully came out before this episode or else people won't know what we're talking about. We talked a lot about some of this stuff, which is like, you know, terrible things can happen if somebody mistakes you for somebody else. And that even in the age of facial recognition technology, genetic testing, that stuff can still happen. And because of our faith in things like facial recognition programs and DNA testing, if you do come up with a mistaken identity case, it makes it much harder to be believed when you're like, I swear to God, it wasn't me. Because people say, we've got your DNA, man, and it's a match. It was you. You're just fibbing.
Yeah, and I think it gets a lot more interesting when you're talking about mistaken identity for a crime that has been committed.
Yeah, totally.
So I already want to skip this first one, can we?
All right, sure, let's do it. and we'll go instead to grand old Israel, where there was an Australian expat named Nicole McCabe, who'd been living there for years, was married. She was 6 months pregnant at the time that this happened in 2010.
Yeah, and very key.
Yes. And apparently she was watching the news, the local news in Israel, and saw that there was an assassination of one of the Hamas chiefs, Mahmoud al-Mabou. That's what I'm going with.
Sure.
Mabou? Yeah, Mabou. M-A-B-H-O-U-H. How else are you going to say that?
That's how I would say it.
So he was assassinated in Dubai, and the Dubai authorities were looking for 26 people, and one of them was Nicole McCabe, and she knew they were looking for her because they showed her passport on television.
That's right. So she was like, what is going on? WTF? So it turns out that if you are in Israeli intelligence agency, mm-hmm. and it's called Mossad, you can say, hey, I want to use real identities as a cover. So instead of like making up a false identity as a cover for their agents, they use real identities, and they basically use the identities of foreigners living in Israel.
Yeah.
And all 26 of these Westerners, evidently, and this is why they were suspected, is because they were real identities used by Mossad as cover that were real people. And they just basically lifted their information from government databases. It's not like she lost her license and her passport and stuff like that. They just took it, basically, and said sorry. Except they didn't say sorry.
They didn't even say sorry. They just did it. And that's so, like, insidious that apparently some of the 26 expats living in Israel were Brits. And the UK expelled the highest-ranking Mossad agent from the Israeli embassy as a result of this. It's just like, you don't do that. And apparently that was, like, standard procedure for the Mossad. So Nicole McKay, being an Australian, was expecting that Australia would help her out of, like, this legal jam that she had been gotten into. And they were like, how about we just give you another passport? And she said, is that it? And they said, yeah, that's it. But you should probably take it because you're going to be on every single watch list in the world now using your old passport. Just go with a new one. Do the smart thing, McCabe. And she said, crikey, let's go.
Now, this is in 2010. I wonder if they've stopped using real identities because that just seems like a recipe for trouble.
It definitely does. It's one of those things that was like super reported on and then never reported on again. So I didn't see any follow-up stuff, but it was widely reported on in different outlets about it. And it wasn't just the same story over and over again. It was investigated, but there wasn't a lot of follow-up.
Yeah. All right, moving on to the next one, number 8 or number 2, depending on how you want to number these.
Sure.
This was a case of mistaken identity that also was the case of someone else having that same name as well, which is, we talked a little bit about this, someone else, I think, I don't think that anyone had the same name in the doppelganger episode, did they?
No.
I don't think so, but that was the case with Will West in New York about the turn of the 20th century.
Yeah, he was brought up on charges of manslaughter and taken to Leavenworth Prison to be, what's it called when they induct you? It's not inducting.
Like identify you?
I guess when they book you, process you.
Procedurally check you in?
Sure, that's what we'll go with. It's better than induction, I'll tell you that. And he said, I've never been here before. I've never been in trouble with the law before. And as part of standard procedure, they followed the Bertillon process of measuring your head, your face, the distance between your eyes, the length of your nose, the width from ear to ear, all this different stuff. It's a form of what's called anthropometry. Anthropometry. And we talked about it before, I think, in the forensics episode, probably the fingerprinting episode.
Yeah.
It was the way that you distinguished one person from another, usually criminals, before we relied on fingerprints. And apparently it worked really well because it was so granular and so detailed. And so they took Will West's measurements and they said, you know what? We found somebody with the exact same measurements as you.
Right. So you have the same name. You have nearly identical measurements, according to this French police procedure of identifying people. You look like them in the photograph. It's not just that your head measures out the same. Mm-hmm. And so we think we've got you, buddy. And he's like, it's not me. I promise you. And as it turns out, the real William West was already in Leavenworth, already serving a life sentence for murder. And even though fingerprinting wasn't widespread, they were able to use, in the early days of fingerprinting, their fingerprints to right this wrong.
Yeah. And some people have speculated that these guys were actually like related somehow, maybe even twins that were pulling a scam. But as far as anyone officially knows, they were essentially doppelgangers that happened to have the same name. And they looked so much alike. If you look at pictures of them, like they were clearly doppelgangers. That Will West, when he was being booked, they showed him the pictures from the past booking.
Uh-huh.
And he said, yeah, that's me, but I don't know where you got that photo. Like, that's how much it looked like him. He thought it was a photo of himself. So they ended up moving to fingerprints. I think the warden of Leavenworth stopped using the Bertillon process like the next day, essentially, and moved to fingerprints instead. Because, because everyone thought the Bertillon process was, like, unassailable. And then this showed, no, there's a problem, and fingerprints got us out of this jam. So let's just all move to fingerprints from that point on.
Yeah. The headline the next day said, Bertillon process assailable, exclamation point.
Clark says.
Fingerprints rule. Oh, yeah, you're Clark. I got that now. It took me a second.
Sure. That's
all I was right. Like, who's Clark? All right, now we can move on to the case of, three gentlemen. There was a bad guy who committed crimes under the names John Smith and a much more fancy pants name, Lord Wilton de Willoughby.
Nice.
And it seemed like this guy, and for about, for almost 20 years, was bilking women out of their jewelry by, writing bad checks. He was a con man and a thief. And a man named Adolf Beck was mistaken for this man. And it wasn't just the case of, oh, you look like him, oh, we booked you, but hey, we cleared it up. This guy did hard time, 7 years in prison.
Yeah, so apparently Lord Wilton de Willoughby's scam was he would find a woman, say that he was looking for a mistress, and I think you'll do just fine. You like me? I like you. And hey, that jewelry you're wearing is kind of shabby. Why don't you give it to me, and I will take it and use it for size to get you some very nice jewelry. And then he just wouldn't return the jewelry. And it was such a petty crime. This wasn't nice jewelry. Like, he must have taken tens of dollars worth of jewelry, but he did it very frequently. He was convicted and put in prison in 1877. The exact same crime was carried out in 1896 by him, but it just so happened that Adolf Beck was fingered for that crime, and they were like, you are the same man who was convicted in 1877, and we know it. And he said, no, it wasn't me, it wasn't me, and they didn't listen to him. Like you said, he did hard time, like, for years.
Yeah, for 7 years. And he had a lot of evidence to prove that it wasn't him. He was like, hey, I was in Peru during this initial crime, and I can prove that.
Right.
And he said, also, I'm not circumcised. Take a look at this. And
everyone said, went, whoa.
Hey, no.
He said, this is important. Stop being childish.
Well, but that's true. He was not circumcised. Apparently, who was the real name? I think maybe Frederick Meyer.
I saw that. I saw William Thomas, William Wyatt. I'm not sure. Most people just refer to him as John Smith.
John Old Circumcised Smith. So 15 convictions, 7 years in prison, and it gets worse. He finally gets out of prison for a crime he didn't commit. Mm-hmm. He's in his, I think he's 60 at this point. Mm-hmm. And old Lord Willoughby was still going to work, and this guy got convicted again for the same guy's crime.
Yeah, so somebody, luckily a journalist at the Daily Mail, had taken an interest in this and was like, this is a gross miscarriage of justice. Like, it's been documented this is not the same guy for years, and they're going after him again. So he turned public opinion against the Crown and basically pointed to the prosecutor and said,
to his penis.
Right. He said, this man is not only incompetent, he's almost a fraud. He's such a bad lawyer.
Yeah.
And we should release this guy. So not only did they release him, the Crown gave him a $5,000 compensation. £5,000 compensation.
Yeah.
Chuck, not only did I do the inflation calculator for pounds, I converted it to dollars.
All right, let's hear it.
So in 1900, 5,000 pounds was worth about 683,000 pounds today. And if you convert that to dollars today, he got $787,000.
Hey, that's about $100,000 a year for being in prison.
I get the impression he wasn't a bad guy from what I saw, but he was not a magnet for money. Apparently, he did not die with any money. I'm going to just say it. I know how much you hate it. He died penniless.
Uh-huh.
But one of the upshots of this is a direct result of this miscarriage of justice from just mistaken identity. The British Court of Appeals was established 3 years after he was convicted the last time.
Well, and it became sort of a, hey, eyewitness, because I think 16 people identified him, and it sort of became a, hey, this reliability of eyewitnesses is not something we could really lean into all the time.
Yeah, 16 people. He really did look a lot like him, but I mean, come on. There's got to be something read a genuine protestation from an innocent person. Let's open our eyes a little bit here, people, okay?
Yeah, and open your pants and just check out the penis. That would have solved it once and for all.
Right.
Why, they were just so prude, I guess. They wouldn't even look at that very clear evidence.
I mean, they were Victorian, Chuck.
All right, should we take a break?
Yeah, I got to say, I'm having a lot of fun here, but I do think we should take a break at this point.
Okay, let's do it. Hey, everybody, Chuck here. Are you thirsty? Well, before you take a sip, have you stopped to think about what's in your water? Many conventional bottled waters contain PFAS, harmful substances known as forever chemicals.
Yeah, but you can drink water as clean as nature intended with Richard's Rainwater.
That's right. Richard's Rainwater collects 100% pure, refreshing drops of rain. Yes, it really is rain. Richard's Rainwater is caught clean before it hits the ground or becomes polluted with pesticides and contaminants that are commonly found in groundwater.
And since rain is naturally pure, there's no need for harsh chemicals or additives. That means Richard's Rainwater contains no added fluoride, no chlorine, no forever chemicals, no microplastics, no nothing. Just pure drops of rain.
That's right. Enjoy the smooth, clean taste of Richard's still rainwater and the long-lasting cold pressured bubbles of Richard's sparkling rainwater. Perfect for sipping or mixing into your favorite cocktail. Just visit richardsrainwater.com to find a retailer near you. Enjoy pure, refreshing rainwater. Sip the sky.
Hey everybody, we're here to tell you about Viator, a tool that you can use to plan and book travel experiences around the world.
That's right. The Viator app and website make it easy to explore 300,000 plus travel experiences so you can discover what's out there no matter where you're traveling or what you're interested in.
Yep, Viator can help you plan better travel experiences. 300,000 plus travel experiences to choose from means you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy.
That's right. You can also enjoy real traveler reviews to get insider information from people who've already been on the experience that you're considering. Plus, you get free cancellation that helps you plan for the unexpected.
Yeah, and Viator offers 24/7 customer service, so you know you'll get support at any hour if things aren't going as planned. So download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find the perfect travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey, everybody. It's halftime and the scoreboard is not looking good. You're feeling low and not sure you can pull out a win. And that's when you have to dig deep, lift your head up, and say to yourself, time to get back in the game. Pull off some bank heists and take as much of your friend's money as you possibly can.
That's right. The smash hit mobile game Monopoly Go lets you compete with your friends to get the most riches and the biggest empire. It's the Monopoly you love, but on your phone, anytime, with tons of new twists, including leaderboards to compare your progress to your buddies.
That's right. You can play on countless dynamic Monopoly boards. You can make your friends bankrupt by smashing their landmarks with a wrecking ball, and you can charge other players rent for your iconic properties.
Plus, you can even work with your friends to crack open community chests in tournaments to get rewards and climb the leaderboard.
So get back out there, put on your game face, and download Monopoly Go, now free on the App Store or Google Play.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right. This one is a little sad on a lot of levels.
Yeah.
This was a medical identity theft. And by the way, this we want to thank our old, if we're doing a top 10, chances are it's from our old friends at HowStuffWorks.com because we used to write a lot of those.
This one specifically is by Nicholas Jerbis, or Gerbus. I don't know how you pronounce his name, but I think he did a bang-up job on this one.
Bang-up job. So this is a case of Andre Sachs, who lived in Salt Lake City, Utah, was a mom, had four kids, and all of a sudden was reported that her newborn child, under her name, tested positive for illegal drugs, which is a problem for that mom. And she's like, hey, listen, I got four kids, but I don't have a newborn, and I certainly don't have a newborn that tested positive for drugs.
Meth, no less. So not only was the newborn tested positive for meth, the newborn had been abandoned by the mother, who had also split with a $10,000 medical bill. Addicts her baby to meth, abandons the baby, doesn't pay a $10,000 bill. So, of course, the hospital's like, you're a crook, and we're not going to listen to anything you said. The woman's like, no, I swear to God, it was not me. And it finally turned out that a drug-addicted woman had broken into Andre Sachs's car, got her ID, which is a lesson. Never leave your license in your car. That's just a bad idea all around.
Yeah. True.
Got her medical records and then went and gave birth as Andre Sachs and ultimately apparently amended Andre Sachs' medical history with this information that may or may not have been purged.
Yeah. So, you know, who knows what this imposter reported about their medical history, but Sachs can't find out because there are laws, privacy laws, that prevent the records from being shown even to her. Mm-hmm. So basically she has to always sort of be on the lookout for this. She has in real life a clotting disorder in her blood. And if she's given the wrong blood type, she could die. So she doesn't really even know what's in there for what kind of blood type she has on her medical record. So now Andre Sachs has to be just really careful and I guess proactive anytime she goes to the hospital or doctor.
Yeah. The whole thing's called medical identity theft. This happened in, I think, 2010-ish, and it was like a super scary 2010 thing to happen. But apparently it was happening at the time fairly frequently, enough that they interviewed a couple other people, and they were like, man, if this happens to you, you are on your own.
Yeah.
Because not only is the hospital not helping you, they sick basically billing investigators to find out what's going on. And they interviewed Andre Sachs's like children to find out had mommy been pregnant recently. They would not believe her. They did not take her word for it. And it wasn't until she took a DNA test to prove like this is not my child. They finally started
first
to back off.
You
yeah,
know,
exactly.
I wonder if you could like demand that first rather than putting your family through all that, you know?
I think so. You just show up with a Ziploc bag of blood at the investigator's office and be like, test this. You just plunk it down on the desk in front of them.
Or just spit at them and say, collect this.
There you go. Oh, boy, Chuck, that turned dark pretty fast, but I liked it.
Well, that whole story was dark. It's very just a heartbreaking situation all the way around.
I've got a little positive spin for you then.
Oh, okay.
At the end of the article I read, this is a different article. Apparently the mother, the actual like biological mom who had abandoned her kid got let out of jail because she pled guilty to some other stuff and did some time and like did her time. But Andre Sachs was interviewed when asked how she felt about it. And she said, if the use of my ID is what allowed that baby a chance to survive, then it's worth it to me.
Wow. I thought you were going to say that. You know, the biological mom turned her life around and reclaimed the baby. And
no, don't be naive, Chuck.
No. Oh, that's a good one. How about this? Number five, or we skipped one. So number four?
Six.
Six? How can we be this bad at this?
I don't know. Math has never
been
our friend.
In 2003, the cops in Britain said, we would very much like to arrest you, Peter Hamkin, and that's how we do things over here if we're cops, because we think you've murdered someone. We're not going to pull a gun on you, but we're just going to ask you very kindly to come with us. We think you murdered a woman in Italy last year in 2002. Mm-hmm. You matched the description of the person, and you're coming with me, but this bartender was like, I never been to Italy.
And they're like, you sound like you have been. As a matter of fact, you sound like you're from Italy, friend.
He said, but it's not a true.
So this bartender, what was his name? Peter Hamkin, I believe.
Yeah, Hamkin.
He was like, what? You guys have never been to Italy. I certainly wasn't there when this murder happened. They said, okay, not only do you look just like the description of the guy that we're looking for, we're going to take your blood and, oh, yeah, you're a match, my friend. You're a match to this, I guess, the evidence that had been found on the scene. And Peter Hampkin was suddenly in a lot of trouble, despite the fact that it was not him. And this is where we reached kind of like the beginnings of the true dystopian mistaken identity stuff.
Yeah, this one, I understand it in a way, mm-hmm. but here's how it works. If you are using DNA databases to match someone, mm-hmm. it is going to compare subsites on the strand that are called locus, or together they're called loci. And that's just like, I've seen it described as showing like the gene's neighborhood. It's the physical location of the gene on a chromosome.
Okay.
And depending on where you are and what lab you are and where you are in the world, you might use a certain amount of these loci as identifiers. In the States, I think the FBI uses 13. In the UK, it is 10. Mm-hmm. And apparently that you can like make mistakes. Like, I thought DNA was the gold standard.
Yeah.
And reading this, it seems like if you're just looking at as low as 6 loci for a match, then that's can be a real problem.
It certainly can. I think they thought before that 9 gave you a 1 in 113 billion chance of a false positive. But apparently people looked into it and they're like, where did you get that evidence, FBI? And they were like, we don't have to tell you. Be quiet. So no one's entirely certain what the actual chance is. But the basis, you said DNA was the gold standard. It totally is for forensics. And the chances are really, really small that there would be a false match using standard search procedures. Because they're looking at, I think you said 13. I believe they've upped it to 20
in America.
Now. Yeah.
Okay.
They've upped it to 20. There's 20 sites that they say these loci are going to be the ones that we check. And you can have a minimum when you, like, if you arrest somebody
right.
and you take their blood, you work up a DNA profile of that person. You have to have at least a minimum of those 20 covered, preferably up to 20 for your profile. And then the more you have and the more you match the 20 loci, the less of a chance you have of a false positive. But it can happen. And I think the point of the people who are saying, like, we need to talk about this, that there can be false positives, is because if you are on a jury, especially if you watch a lot of CSI or Law and Order, you're like,
right.
oh, you got DNA evidence, it's over for you, pal.
Right.
And the idea that it could be wrong is just out the window. And they're like, we need to train the public and juries better than this because they think it's again, unassailable.
Right. But the idea is you can always get way more granular with your DNA peekaloo. And really find out the truth, though, right?
Well, that's how Peter Hampkin finally got off, that bartender that kicked this whole thing off. They did a further DNA profile of him, and they're like, oh, okay, it's not you. Because the chances of somebody having those same mutations, they look at short tandem repeating snippets, which are non-protein coding sequences, which means, like, it doesn't matter if they mutate a lot. So they mutate a lot. So the chances of you having the same mutation in all 20 of those is vanishingly small. And even in all 8 of them is pretty small, enough that it is still the gold standard. It's just if you get caught and you have money for a good lawyer, you can be like, you need to do a better profile. And then they'll find that it's not actually you.
Right. And of course, I use peekaloo. That's not the official language they use for looking at DNA. That's peekaboo.
Right.
I use the slang.
Okay.
All right. I think we do one more, then we take our other break. How about that?
Oh, okay. I'm still having a lot of fun here, Chuck.
Okay, good. All right. So I guess we're on either number 4 or number 3 or number 5 or number
17.
6. There was a interesting case of mistaken identity in, which turned out to be a sibling in mm-hmm. Alaska. Police had a sexual assault case, and they had a semen sample, they had usable DNA, they had a DNA match. This guy was already in the system, so they thought, like, all right, this is an open and shut case, except one problem. This guy was in jail already when the crime was committed, so what are we going to do?
Yeah, this one was incredibly fascinating. I think this Alaskan DNA analyst or forensic analyst, like went around the country giving talks on this case and really opened people's eyes, because it turned out that the guy who was in prison, whose DNA matched the semen on the crime scene, I guess, had gotten a bone marrow transplant from his brother. And because of that, he was carrying around his brother's DNA in his blood, because when you get a bone marrow transplant, you're getting like a red blood cell stem cell transplant, and those things turn into red blood cells and they test your blood. So whatever DNA your blood has is what they come back with on the DNA profile.
I wonder if the other brother immediately was like, you're looking for my brother. Because like
maybe
it sounds like the brother, you know, the other brother was not a good guy, obviously. I mean, clearly if he committed sexual assault, but if he was already in jail for something else, then it sounds like good brother, bad brother scenario.
No, they were both sexual assaulters. The one was already in jail for it. The one who actually did it had not been caught yet. They thought that the guy who was in jail already was the perp for the outside one. And it turned out, no,
okay,
there was a whole family of sexual assaulters.
This makes a lot more sense now.
Yeah.
I get it. Okay. All right. I mean, it made sense before, but this makes such glorious sense that I feel like the blinders are off.
So this really is like enough of a thing that that forensic analyst from Alaska who discovered this, because at first they were like, well, the lab obviously made a mix up, and they looked in there like, what is going on here? They started looking into it more, and they're like, this could be a thing, actually. We need to let the law enforcement know. Like, there's a thing that happens when you get a bone marrow transplant. Your DNA changes. And there was a guy named Chris Long on a, I read about in an IFL Science article. And they tested him 4 years after he'd gotten a transplant from a donor in Germany who he'd never met, I don't believe. And his DNA in different parts of his body were entirely the donor's, including, get this, Chuck, his semen had nothing but his donor's DNA. So if he fathered a child, whose kid would that be? Because the kid would have the same DNA as the donor, not him, his dad.
Well, it would be his kid still.
Legally, it would be his kid, but biologically, wouldn't it be the German donor's child?
I don't know. I think there's an old saying about that, like whoever smelt it, dealt it, but I can't quite work it out.
There's a couple of rhymes I'm trying not to say out loud right now.
Two bad brothers, man. That was sitting there right in front of my face.
Yeah.
Well, so they both went to jail, right?
Yeah, I believe the Alaska forensic analyst got them, nabbed their person.
Sweet.
Is it time for that break now, you promised?
Yeah, I'm going to go ruminate on that justice served, and we'll be right back. Learning things with Chuck and Chuck. Learning all the things. Stop, you
should know. Hey, everybody, Chuck here. Are you thirsty? Well, before you take a sip, have you stopped to think about what's in your water? Many conventional bottled waters contain PFAS, harmful substances known as forever chemicals.
Yeah, but you can drink water as clean as nature intended with Richard's Rainwater.
That's right. Richard's Rainwater collects 100% pure, refreshing drops of rain. Yes, it really is rain. Richard's Rainwater is caught clean before it hits the ground or becomes polluted with pesticides and contaminants that are commonly found in groundwater.
And since rain is naturally pure, there's no need for harsh chemicals or additives. That means Richard's Rainwater contains no added fluoride, no chlorine, no forever chemicals, no microplastics, no nothing. Just pure drops of rain.
That's right. Enjoy the smooth, clean taste of Richard's still rainwater and the long-lasting cold pressured bubbles of Richard's sparkling rainwater. Perfect for sipping or mixing into your favorite cocktail. Just visit richardsrainwater.com to find a retailer near you. Enjoy pure, refreshing rainwater. Sip the sky.
Hey, everybody. It's halftime and the scoreboard is not looking good. You're feeling low and not sure you can pull out a win. And that's when you have to dig deep, lift your head up, and say to yourself, time to get back in the game. Pull off some bank heists and take as much of your friend's money as you possibly can.
That's right. The smash hit mobile game Monopoly Go lets you compete with your friends to get the most riches and the biggest empire. It's the Monopoly you love, but on your phone, anytime, with tons of new twists, including leaderboards to compare your progress to your buddies.
That's right. You can play on countless dynamic Monopoly boards. You can make your friends bankrupt by smashing their landmarks with a wrecking ball. And you can charge other players rent for your iconic properties.
Plus, you can even work with your friends to crack open community chests in tournaments to get rewards and climb the leaderboard.
So get back out there, put on your game face, and download Monopoly Go, now free on the App Store or Google Play.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Today's episode is brought to you by Altoids because, let's face it, unraveling the mysteries of the universe is tough work. But with Altoids, your breath will be stronger than a black hole's gravitational pull, more intense than an alien abduction, and more reliable than your phone's battery during a podcast marathon. When it comes to needing intense freshness, Altoids have you covered. Altoids are stronger than your favorite conspiracy theory, more intense than the latest true crime docuseries, and more reliable than a Bigfoot sighting. They're not just mints, they're curiously strong mints. Find Altoids in the checkout aisle. Grab your tin today. So I guess we should say, Chuck, if you're out there in podcast land listening to us and you didn't actually have to hear an ad, give us a double toot.
Toot, toot.
You know, there was an emailer. I think he bothered me several times with his email that trying to convince us that we were in podcast land, because we used to say that out there in podcast land.
Right.
And this guy ruined it. We just quit saying it because he was like, you, in fact, are in podcast land.
I kind of get where that guy's coming from.
Was that you?
Maybe.
That's weird. You signed your name as Jean-Paul Dusseldorf.
8367 at Hotmail.
What? I don't get that one.
That was who sent it in. JohnPaul8367 at hotmail.com.
Yeah, I gotcha.
That was their email.
Can we talk about these twins?
Sure. Because apparently in real life, Chuck, twins actually get out of criminal prosecution because they say, it wasn't me, it was my identical twin.
Yeah, I don't see how this is. I mean, can't they do more work to arrest somebody for a crime when they know it's one of the two?
No.
All right. Well, this happened in Germany. a big department store in Europe is the Kaufhaus des Westens.
Very nice.
And in January 2009, there were three people who broke into one of these department stores. They were smart. They wore masks. They wore latex gloves. They stole close to $7 million in jewelry.
Yeah.
But one of them left one of their gloves behind, and they did a DNA test on the sweat inside the glove. Gross. And they had two matches of these two identical twins, Hassam and Abbas. And Germany doesn't give last names, so their last initial was O.
O'Reilly.
And Hassam O'Reilly. And they basically did what you said. Well, these 27-year-old twins were like, wasn't me. And the other one said, wasn't me. And they let them go.
They did. And I just want to give a shout out to this group who I'm not like an admirer of criminals or anything like that. But I read, Chuck, they did like real Great Muppet Caper stuff and like slid down ropes coming from the skylights to do this robbery. It wasn't like a smash and grab. It was, they had finesse at least.
Right. Okay. Movie style robbery.
So, exactly. So in Germany, they like you can't just lock up both people because one of them might be innocent. And if you have to make that decision under German law, and the same thing in America, you can't lock up innocent people. And it's better to let a criminal go free than to lock up an innocent person. That's the trade-off that we have. And it's not just happened in Germany with the O'Reilly brothers. It's happened around the world in other places, too.
Yeah, I think in Malaysia in 2009, there were identical twins who were narcotics traffickers, and they had a death sentence, but they couldn't prove who was who. Here's my thing, and I agree with due process.
Yeah.
But I think if you strong arm them a little bit.
Smack them around with the rubber hose?
No, nothing like that. But like, hey, one of you is going to go to prison. And we'll flip a coin. We'll flip a Deutschmark. I still got one in my pocket from the old days.
Sure.
And one of you's going to go to jail. I think they could pressure them into one of them. Like, they got to really be in unison. You know, one of them would eventually crack, the person who didn't do it or
you
did do it.
So, but the thing is, I mean, we're talking about twin siblings here. I mean, if they've got resolve to not rat the other one out.
I guess if anybody in high school,
does, they've got it. Yeah, exactly. So I'm sure if both of them know, heck, both of them might have been there. It was three robbers, so two of them might have been the twins. They just could not say which one that was definitely there, so they said no. And yeah, I mean, if you have no other evidence, what can you do? What can you do, Hotshot?
Smack them around with a rubber hose.
I guess so. You'd be like, by Dusseldorf, you will crack.
All right. So I think we got a couple of more. We just had a brief, this is how the sausage is made, a brief off-mic convo.
Yeah, I went, me.
We're going to circle back to the original one that I wanted to skip at the end.
Okay.
Because Josh is in love with it.
I love it.
He wants to marry it. He's so in love.
I'm already married, Chuck.
We're skipping. I wonder if anyone ever goes to see what we skipped. No one cares.
I'll bet there's some army members that are like, listen up, everybody. I got the dirt on the ones.
Wow. All right. So we're going to finish, or do you want to finish with the one I didn't like? And then,
yeah,
because you really wanted to do number one.
Yeah, we have to, man. It's the most astounding case of mistaken identity in recent memory.
All right. So let's do it right this second.
Okay. Go now.
So this was a case, geez, it's both sad and uplifting, kind of depending on whose family you're in.
Yeah.
But it was a very tragic day in 2006. I kind of remember this happening.
Me too.
There was a semi-truck driver who in April of that year, like I said, fell asleep at the wheel, crossed a median, and crashed into a university van from Taylor University that had 9 people in the van. And it was a very bad crash. It killed 5 I think all students, but 5 people. Mm-hmm. And it was just, you know, people were flung all over the place. Their stuff was flung all over the place. And it was obviously a mess of a scene, of an accident scene. And 2 young women got mistaken for one another in a very tragic way.
Yeah, so I guess Whitney Cernak she was basically bundled up onto a stretcher and medevaced out by helicopter. But the first responder who put her on the stretcher had grabbed an ID of another girl who was in the van that looked a lot like her, especially, I'm sure, at night under crazy circumstances like that. And the ID went to Laura Van Ryn. And while Whitney Cernak was alive, Laura Van Ryn was dead. But people now thought that this person who was bloodied, beat up, whose face was swollen and would soon be bandaged for weeks was Laura Van Ryn, when in fact it was Whitney Cernak.
Yeah, so, boy, this one is, like I said, very, very bad news for one family and very good news for another, in that one family thought their daughter was alive and she had passed, and the other way around. So it's just, this one's a tough one to even think about, how someone gets through something like this. In true movie fashion, inconsistencies started to kind of pile up as she recovered.
Yeah.
And people were sort of suspicious of what was going on. And finally, someone asked her to write her name, and she wrote down Whitney. It's just, it's a moment, like, you know, it's a pretty chilling moment.
it's a movie moment, for goodness sake. Like, the whole thing
really is.
It's crazy. Because, I mean, in the meantime, like, Laura's family were the ones who were at Whitney's bedside as she recovered for weeks in the hospital. And, like, they had had a funeral service for Whitney. So her family was just now coming to terms with her, with the fact that she was dead when they found out that, no, she's alive. And Laura's family, who'd been, like, hoping that their child was recovering, now found out that their child was dead. Like, it's just mind-boggling that this actually happened somewhere in Michigan, no less.
Yeah, very, very sad case.
Yeah.
But we don't want to leave you with a sad case, right?
No, that's why we're going looping back to do number one, which is actually number nine.
Number 10, which is number nine.
Right.
Oh, boy. This is about Peter Sellers, who somehow was mistaken for Woody Allen early in his career a couple of key times.
They're famously doppelgangers.
I know. They don't look much alike. A couple of things I'll attribute it to is Woody Allen looked, when he was younger, he, you know, he looked different than you might think of him now, first of all. Mm-hmm. And Peter Sellers was a sort of man of a thousand faces as an actor. He was well known for doing disguises, doing accents. No one ever knew who the real Peter Sellers was.
Right.
Fascinating dude, very troubled, not too great guy in real life, but... I'm a huge Peter Sellers fan and, like, read biographies on him. But that's what he was known for, is looking like other people. So it's no surprise that maybe he would get confused with someone else.
I'm a David Niven guy, by the way.
I love David Niven.
So apparently on the set of Casino Royale, Leo Jaffe, who was the head of Columbia Pictures, the studio making the movie at the time, which is, I think, 1967 is when that movie was made. Yeah.
Sounds right.
And it was based on the Ian Fleming novel, Casino Royale. It was a James Bond movie, but it was a horror show. It was so poorly conceived and made that they had five directors, each shooting different parts of the movie, each working with different James Bonds, David Niven, Peter Sellers, Woody Allen, I don't know who else was there. And then each of the directors didn't know what the other one was doing. And then they put it together and thought it was going to be a good idea. But even before then, they had bigger problems on their hands because Leo Jaffe was talking to who he thought was Woody Allen, when in turn it was actually Peter Sellers. And he started complaining about Peter Sellers to Woody Allen, who was in fact actually Peter Sellers.
That's right. And I'm just now looking at a picture of Peter Sellers from the late 60s. And with the horn rim glasses, he and Woody Allen, I can see it a little bit, I guess.
Especially if you're a studio exec who couldn't care less. Like, all the actors are just like cattle to you with or cash registers as well, you know?
This happened again on the set of What's New, Pussycat. And at this point, Sellers was pretty annoyed that this kept happening and that he was... You know, he was a big star at that time, and Woody Allen was kind of just getting started. So, and he had quite an ego, so he was none too pleased.
Yeah. So if you read write-ups on Casino Royale, the 1967 version, people are just like, this was a legendary catastrophe, which are some of the most fun movies to read about. Those and Stanley Kubrick films are, and Lars von Trier films are the most enjoyable to read about because people are just... agog for one reason or another about what their subject is.
Agog?
Mm-hmm.
Great word.
I think so too, man. I've been peppering really great words throughout this episode, if you ask me.
I've noticed.
You got anything else? You want to talk about some more stolen identity or mistaken identity stuff?
Nah.
All right, let's not then. If you want to know more about mistaken identities, you can check out this article on How Stuff Works. And since Chuck said, nah, it's time for listener mail.
I'm just going to read the first thing I saw because I didn't have one prepared. And this is called Chuck's Rope Drama.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, guys, I'm imagining we're going to play this out for years. Hey, guys, I'm imagining Chuck had a rough go at practicing shibari on himself. I'm sure hoping this is true so we can get a future topic on the art of shibari.
Isn't that like a BDSM thing?
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure it is. Yeah, I think it's rope binding for sexual pleasure.
Oh, Japanese bondage.
Yep.
Okay.
Boy, I just know that like in the back of my head, apparently.
I love it. These pictures are
Yeah, these pictures are interesting.
So, Chuck, answer the question. Is that where you got your rope trauma?
No, it wasn't Shibari, unfortunately. That seems like a lot more fun than what happened to me. Okay. But this is from Ryan. Loves the show. Listen to every episode. And Ryan works in a diesel shop.
Mm-hmm. Diesel, like the clothing line?
No, for over-the-road trucks.
Okay.
Which I don't even know what that means. Is that like a long-haul trucker, probably?
No, I think it's like a flying truck.
Okay, right. We should leave that in there. Hey, Momo.
Yeah, Mo just barked everybody.
It's nice to keep my mind active while I'm mindlessly wrenching on bolts all day. And that is from Ryan Schmidt in Waterloo, IA.
Waterloo, Idaho?
IA. Where is that?
That's Iowa.
Yeah.
I just wanted to rib the Iowans and the Idahoans. And that was Ryan?
That's Ryan.
Thanks a lot, Ryan. That was a good question. So, Chuck, do you want to share now what the rope trauma was?
No, I literally think we should play this out for years.
Man, so I was talking to one of my friends and neighbors, Wesley, and he had just heard the episode about Mallory today and was like, so what was it? What happened to Chuck? I was like, he won't tell me. He could not believe that you didn't actually tell me. I was like, I don't know any more than anyone else. So.
Oh, we got a genuine internet mystery then. I love it.
Yeah, it's a genuine one. If you want to send us a guess at what happened to Chuck with the rope, you can already cross Shibari off of the list. You can send it in an email to stuffpodcast@iheartradio.com.
Stuff You Should Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Hey everybody, are you thirsty? Well, sip on pure, refreshing Richard's Rainwater. Yes, it's really rain, caught clean before it hits the ground. Rain is naturally pure, so there's no need for harsh chemicals or additives. Richard's Rainwater contains no chlorine, no forever chemicals, no microplastics, no nothing. Enjoy the smooth, clean taste of Richard's Still Rainwater or the long-lasting and cold-pressured bubbles of Richard's Sparkling Rainwater. Visit richardsrainwater.com to find a retailer near you. That's richardsrainwater.com. Sip the sky. The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. But you know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line, thanks to Visible. It's true. So switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com.
Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
Childproofing people's homes is hard, but Duracell is making it just a bit simpler. Not only are they committed to educating parents, caregivers, and medical professionals about the importance of battery safety, they make the only lithium coin batteries with a non-toxic bitter coating to help discourage children from swallowing them. Duracell even features child-secure packaging designed to avoid accidental opening. Learn more at Duracell.com/power safely. Available on 2032, 2025, and 2016 sizes.